The Yeshiva Gedol of Johannesburg proudly presents the Wednesday evening shiur, covering the Parashas HaShavua, the Yomim Tovim, and other special topics as delivered by its founder and Rosh HaYeshiva, Rabbi Israel Chaim Goldfein, Zichrono Livrocha. Details regarding how to order additional shiurim follow immediately after the conclusion of the shiur.
Berches Posuk Hei. This evening's shiur, we're going to speak about a subject which is not spoken about too often. I think we once gave a shiur on this many, many years ago. You'll find it very informative and interesting, especially if you're a Kohen or a Levi. It's the Parsha of the Levim. It states, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe lemor. Take the Levim. This is the sons. The sons of Levi. Levi was one of the 12 sons of Yaakov Avinu. He actually was a number three, the third son to be born to Yaakov from Leah. Take the Levim, Rashi says, Kochem bedvorim. Can't take them physically. Take them with words. Ashreichem shetisku liyoy shamoshim lamokam. How fortunate you are that you are have been chosen to be the servants of the Almighty. And then the Torah tells us, what should they do to initiate them, to inaugurate them into the service of the Levim. And it goes through the protim, the details. Pasuk test. And it says, V'kraftu es ha-Levim lifnei ayol meid. They were brought to the sanctuary. Later it says, V'amaretu es ha-Levim lifnei Aaron levonov. Bring them to Aaron. Now Aaron, who was the Kohen Gadol, he himself was a Levi, because the Kohanim were from the Levim, from Shevet Levi. But the Levim and the Kohanim were merely one family in Shevet Levi. Aaron Uzari, Aaron and his seed. The Levim were the rest of the Shevet, the rest of the tribe. These Levim now were being chosen to become special servants to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to serve the Kohanim, Aaron and his sons. And then in Pasuk Yud Dalet it states, Bivdalto es alavim miteich b'nei Yisrael, v'hoyu li halvi'im. You should separate the Levim from the midst of Yisrael, and they should be for me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. So here we have the mitzvah, Lahabdul Ezera Levi liyesh nesunim Hashem, to separate the tribe of Levi from the rest of Israel, where they should be given over to Hashem. What was the purpose? In Pasuk Tesvov, it states, V'achreichen yavo alavim la'avod es ohel moed, and afterwards, then the Levim should come to serve in the sanctuary. And also, this repeats itself again in Pasuk Yutes, Be'etno es ha-Levim nesunim la'aren alavonov, the Levim should be given over to Aaron and his sons, miteich b'nei Yisrael, from the midst of b'nei Yisrael, la'aved es avodas b'nei Yisrael, in order to serve on the behalf of the children of Israel, be'ohel moed, in the sanctuary, u'lechaper al b'nei Yisrael, and to atone for them, and there will not be a plague, heaven forbid, on Israel when they approach the Kodesh, when they approach the sanctuary. So Rashi explains that because Shleitztachu Logeshes Ala Kodesh, the service was on all of Israel. But the Levim now will perform the tasks on behalf of Israel. Now Yisrael will not be obligated to come close to the sanctuary because it was dangerous. It was dangerous to come close to the sanctuary. There were many, many, many halachos, many laws. And if they were transgressed, they carried very severe punishments, even to the Misa B'dei Shemayim, death penalty from heaven. So you have to be very, very careful, very expert, had expertise in this. An enormous amount of study went into it, like we'll speak about later. Therefore, they will protect the B'nai Yisrael. They will guard the sanctuary. They will fulfill the tasks in the sanctuary. Israel will not be obligated with that task. In Pasuk Kof Dalet, the Torah goes into a little more detail. Zeis asher la'levim. This is what the Levim will do. From 25 years up, they will come and they will then be in the ranks to serve at the sanctuary. Once they're 50, Yoshev mitzvah abeda. Then they will return from the ranks of the Levim. And they will not serve further. They will serve their brethren in the sanctuary, lishmor, mishmeres, to guard, and the specific tasks. This is what they will do. And we'll see a little later exactly some their specific tasks. Why was it that the Levim were separated from the rest of Israel and placed in the ranks of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to fulfill these tasks? Now this, and why wasn't this sufficient with Israel themselves? And why Dafke, specifically the Levim? This reflects a chisor in Israel. There was a shortcoming in Israel, and a maila, and an advantage in the Levim. The Pasuk tells us in Pasuk Tes Zayin, if we just go back a few psukim, Ki nesunim nesunim hema li miteich b'nei Yisrael. They are to be given to me from the b'nei Yisrael. Tachas pitras kol rechem b'chor, kol mi b'nei Yisrael lokachti eisom li. In place of the firstborn, the first to come from the womb of the mother of the Yisraelim. Ki li kol b'chor b'nei Yisrael b'odam v'abehima, b'yam hakosi kol b'chor b'eretz Mitzrayim, higdashti eisom li. Because by rights, the Almighty says, the firstborn of all of Israel, the firstborn of the people, and the firstborn of the animals belong to me. When I brought the plague on all of the firstborn of the Egyptians, and at that time I sanctified them. And now, now I am exchanging them for the Levim. What do we see from this? We see firstly that at the time of the 10th plague, the Makas Bechoras, smiting of the firstborn, HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a great miracle. The miracle was that even though this was a plague to annihilate every firstborn of the Egyptian, miraculously, this plague did not affect any of the Hebrews that fulfilled the mitzvahs that they were supposed to. They had the Korban Pesach, the sacrifice of the Pesach. They put the blood of the Pesach on mezuzas beis secho, on their doorposts. And even though, given shenitna reshus lemashke yishuvein amavchim, once there's a plague, HaKadosh Baruch Hu grants permission for a plague to go and annihilate not, it's very difficult to escape from this. Nevertheless, miraculously, every firstborn of the Israelim was saved, and even the firstborn of the animals. So at that time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, they belong to me. A few reasons. First of all, it was Zutei Shalyam, or Matzel Minari. Mora tells us that if you save something, if you save, for example, a sea is in danger at sea, and it's about to sink, and a salvage company comes along and saves it, belongs to them. I believe this is the law of the high seas, but this is the law of the Torah also. I recall many years ago, made the front page of the Sunday newspapers, that there was an oil tanker that was caught in the waters off the Cape. And for a number of days they were trying to save it. And finally they gave up. And another company came with a helicopter, landed on the deck, put a claim in for that gigantic tanker with all of the oil, bought their own salvage company, and they saved the ship. And it became theirs. Mora says, this is Zutei Shalyam, Matzel Min Hayam, or Matzel Min Ha'ari. If you have a lion attacking an animal of yours, and someone else goes and drives off the lion, according to the halacha, the animal's his. Because at that time, the owners gave up possession. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said the same thing. He said, these people belong to me now. And secondly, in this Kadoshu, they were sanctified. Because when a miracle takes place, the person rises to the level of the miracle. He sees the Yad Hashem, the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he becomes closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, at that time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Ki li kol b'chor b'nei Yisrael. Every firstborn belongs to me. At the time when I brought the plague on and destroyed all of the firstborn of Egypt, I sanctified the firstborn of Israel. And they were set aside for the Avodas HaMishkan at that time. They would be set aside to be the Levim and the Kohanim, to serve in the Mishkan, in the sanctuary. But something happened. What happened? At the time of the Egel Azor, the golden calf, they became nifsul. They became disqualified because they served Avodah Zarah, idolatry. At that time, they all became disqualified. So they lost that level. Now, Kodesh Baruch Hu needed a replacement. So therefore he says, V'ekaches ha-Levim taches kol b'chor b'vnei Yisrael. I am taking the Levim in exchange. I give you back your firstborn, and I will take the Levim. Why the Levim? Because the Levim were the only tribe, the only shevet, that in totality did not serve the Egel Azov, the golden calf. In Parshas Kisiso, Lamed Beis Chof Vov, it states, Vayamid Moshe Bishar Hamachaneh Vayema Mi Lashem Eloi. Moshe took his sword and he stood at the gates of the camp. He stood up against the whole camp, millions of people, and he said, Mi Lashem Eloi, whoever is for Hashem, let him come to me. Vayeosfu Elov Kol Bnei Levi. And all of the tribe of Levi came to Moshe's side. They said, we're innocent. We didn't have anything to do with this. And there Rashi brings from the Gemara in Yuma Daf Samach Vav, Mikan Shekol HaShevet Kosher. And there we learn that the entire Shevet, the entire tribe was kosher. So Kodesh Baruch Hu said, I'm going to make a swap. I'll give you back your firstborn, and I will take Shevet Levi. If we go back to Parshas Bamidbar, which was a few weeks ago, in Perek Gimel Pasuk Hei, Torah tells us there, Vaydaber Hashem al Moshe le'mor, Hakreves Mate Levi, Vamadata Yisrael lifnei Aaron HaKohen, Vishersu Yisrael. Bring close the tribe of Levi, and stand them, take them to Aaron, because they will serve him, they will be the assistants to the Kohanim. Vishomru es Mishmatai, and they will guard and fulfill the tasks. Es ves Mishmeres kol eido lifnei Eil Meid, Lavei Ravoides HaMishkon. And a few of the tasks are mentioned there. Then it states, V'nosata salavim la'aren ulevonov. Give all of the levim to Aaron and his sons. Nesunim nesunim heimalei me'es b'nei Yisrael. Where they will be given to Aaron from the b'nei Yisrael. Yes, Aaron v'zbonov tifkei v'shomru es kunosom. V'hazora korev yomos. And Aaron and his sons will be in charge. And that way only Aaron and his sons and the Levim will have to do directly with all of the avoda, the service in the Beis HaMikdosh. And anyone who's an alien means someone who is not a Levi, let him keep his distance. He will not have to come close, lest, heaven forbid, something could happen to him. Now Rashi says there, that in Pasuk Ches, Shekula no yiskukim l'tzorchei HaMikdosh, everyone was obligated to send a representative for the Avodas HaMikdosh, the service in the Beis HaMikdosh. And therefore every family had to send their firstborn. Ele shalvim boim tachteyam bishlichusam. But the Levim are standing in their place, like we explained. The fichach leichich mehem ha-maisrish b'schorim. Therefore, the Israel has to pay them. Because, not necessarily for their services, but they have to pay them to see that they'll have a living. Because all day they were busy with the tasks in the Beis HaMikdosh, which were really the tasks of every family in Israel. So therefore, Israel has to pay them. Therefore, they had to give them the maestros. 10% of all the grains, of all the oil, of all the vine, and so forth. The maestros were given to the Levim. And as it states, Rashi brings the posuk, later on, kisochahu lachem, chelef avedaschem. This is their payment in return for their avoda, for their service in the Beis HaMikdosh. Now, it was for this reason that when Klal Yisrael were counted, and they were counted many times, and they were just counted in Bamidbar, Parshas Bamidbar, the tribe of Levi was never counted together with them. The other 11 Shvatim which were counted, but not the tribe of Levi. It could have been 12 Shvatim because Yosef was divided into two, Ephraim and Manasseh. And Rashi tells us in Bamidbar Aleph Posuk Mem Tes, it states, Ach es Mate Levi, Hashem was telling Moshe to count everyone, Ach es Mate Levi leisifkeit ves reshem leisiso. But the tribe of Levi, you shall not count. It doesn't mean you shouldn't count. They were counted. But they shall not be counted together with the B'nai Yisrael. B'seich B'nai Yisrael. B'seich B'nai Yisrael. Together with Yisrael. Rashi explains why. Kedai hu ligyoin shol melech liyais nimne levade. Because they are the ligyoin, the legion of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The legion of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is distinguished. They must not be counted together with the rest of Israel. They were counted separately. And they had different calculations on how to count them. Then Rashi brings a second reason, which is a very interesting reason. He says, Sofar HaKadosh Baruch Hu she'osid lamed gzeira al kol ha'nimnin miben esrim shana v'mala. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that in the future there's going to be a decree on everyone who was 20 years, who was counted as 20 years and older. And that was the Meraglim, when they sent out spies. It wasn't long after this took place. This was in the second year of leaving Mitzrayim. So they came to the border of Eretz Yisrael within 3 days. The plan was is that they were to stay approximately 1 year by Har Sinai as a Simchas Torah. They received the Torah and they rejoiced and studied the Torah. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu took them on a 3-day trip, and it seems it might have only taken 1 day, to the border in Midbar Paron, and they were standing on the border of Eretz Yisrael. And they would have gone immediately into Eretz Yisrael. But one thing happened, and a second thing happened, and a third thing happened. A number of these things are in Baal Eisachar. So there was a number of delays. But then, it still wasn't long, and they would have gone in, and they said, not so fast. We want to see what we're getting into. There's 7 ferocious nations there. There are 31 kings there. Let's take a look first. So this was the Meraglim. They sent the Meraglim, the spies. Spies came back with a Diborah, with Loshon Hara, slander on the land. The people started to cry and say, let's go back to Egypt. And they wanted to rebel. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I've had enough of you. This was the 10th test. And Loshon Hara was the worst, the slander. And he says, therefore, you don't want Eretz Yisrael, you won't have it. Anyone who was between 20 and 60 will die in the desert. The children under 20, they will inherit the land. And that's why they traveled for 40 years in the desert to give time for even the 20-year-olds to die. Now, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that was going to happen. And he didn't want Shevet Levi, the tribe of Levi, to be in this decree. He wanted them to go into Eretz Yisrael. And the decree was anyone who was counted from 20 till 60. And they weren't counted from 20 to 60. They had a different cheshbon. Actually, they were counted from a month old. So therefore, he didn't want them to be counted together. Shemusa b'midbar, oma al yu elu b'chlal, levi shem shali. This tribe belongs to me. Therefore, they should not be included. And Rashi brings Shalei Ta'u Be'ego, because they didn't serve the golden calf. So this was another reason why they weren't counted. But there's actually a question here that we can ask, a very strong question. And that is, Rashi's bringing this from the Medrash Rabbah, because they didn't serve the golden calf. But we could say better. We could say that they weren't involved in the Meraglim, in the spies and the scouts. That's why they weren't included in the decree. Now, why should we say they weren't involved in the Meraglim? Because in Parsha Shalach, Lecha, there Moshe chose a man from every tribe. But he didn't choose anyone from Levi. They didn't send anyone. So why does Rashi say this? The Sifsei Chachomim asks this question. And he's mefalpel too, but he goes into a long discussion on this. He brings some others. But he comes to a conclusion, but it's still somewhat open-ended because he doesn't bring ironclad proofs. He comes to the conclusion that the Levim were involved in the Dibaroh, in this land of Eretz Yisrael. True, they didn't have any scout, but when the scouts came back, they accepted the Loshon Hara, and they also were in those that wanted to revolt. So they were involved. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu only punished those, it states later on, but Kisu es aveneseichem, they will carry their aveireis, plural, two sins. He only punished the generation that was guilty of two sins, the golden calf. These were the two worst sins, the golden calf and the sin of the scouts. Levi was only involved in the sin of the scouts. That's why they were saved. This is the conclusion he comes to, but I don't know if it's ironclad yet, because he's not able to bring any clear sources on it. And I was always under the impression that they were not involved by the Meraglim either, by the scouts either. At any rate, they were counted. While we're speaking, incidentally, the women were not involved in either of the Avedis. They were not involved in the golden calf. That's why they refused to give up their jewelry for it. And they were not involved in Eretz Yisrael. When they said, the men said, let's make a new leader and go back, the women said, Tenulon and Achlo, we want our inheritance in Eretz Yisrael. Noshim were Mechavaveses Oretz. They endeared Eretz Yisrael. Now, what were the tasks of the Levim? It can be divided into two phases. There was what was known as Aveda Lishor, the temporary tasks, as long as there was the Mishkan, the sanctuary, and Avoda Ledoros, and what was their permanent tasks forever when later on there was the Beis Hamikdash. You see, when there was the Mishkan, the sanctuary, so then it was moving from one place to the other, both in the desert, and then for many hundreds of years when it came into Eretz Yisrael, until David HaMelech was able to build the Beis HaMikdash. Well, it could be even then their tasks changed, because there were no longer the Degolim, the marching of all of the camps. Then, when the Beis HaMikdash was built, it was never moved again. It had its permanent place in Yerushalayim and Har HaBayis. What was the Avodah Lishor, the temporary tasks during the 40 years in the desert, perhaps a little later? The Torah tells us, this is also in Parshas Bamidbar, it starts with Per Gimel Posuk Yud Zayin, that Levi had three sons. Levi was not living. So we're referring to the Mishpochas, the families that came from Levi. But Levi had three sons. Vayu Eile B'nei Levi Bishmaisom Gershon Ukohos Umrori. Gershon Kohos Umrori. Each one was given a specific task, he and all of his families. There were over 20,000 Levim at this time, and divided into these three families. The Avoda of Mishpachas HaGershoni, Gershon and his family, firstly, they were to camp around the Mishkan, all three families. There were four major campsites in each direction. There was in the east, the north, the west, and the south. And there were three tribes that camped in each campsite. And that was called the Degel Machne. And there was one flag for each campsite, but it had the symbols of the three tribes that camped in each campsite. Now, the four campsites where you had all of Klal Yisrael, and there were millions, because there were 600,000 men alone between 20 and 60. They encircled the sanctuary. But directly around the sanctuary, in each direction, was another four camps. So one was the three with the three camps, one of Gershon, and one of Kohos, and one of Merari. Gershon, he was to camp, it states in Pasuk of Gimel, he was to camp Achrei HaMishkon Yomo, the western side of the Mishkan. As you came to the Mishkan, to the sanctuary, you came to the eastern end, and you walked east to west. The more west was the more Kodesh. And you came into first the Chotzer, the courtyard, and then the Kodesh, and then the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Near the back of the Mishkan, towards the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Yoma West, that's where Gershon camped. What was their task? Their task, the Torah tells us, was to dissemble, to take apart the Mishkan when it was time to move, and then to assemble it again. And what did they have to dissemble? They would take off, the Mishkan was covered with tapestries made out of various materials, skins, hides made out of other materials. They would take apart all of those, and the various curtains that were used for doorways, and the same thing, all of the walls, which were also made out of material of the chotzer, of the courtyard, and so forth. They would take it all apart, fold it up, load it onto the wagons. There were the agolas, the wagons that were pulled by the oxen. And then they would drive the wagons to the next campsite. And when they would get to the next campsite, then there would be the Hakomas HaMishkon. They would put all of this back. This was the avoda of the Mishpachas HaGershuni Gershon. Then the second son was Kohos. Kohos was Yahanu al Yerech HaMishkon Teimono. That's in Posuk Chof Tes. His campsite around the Mishkon was on the south. So as you were looking at the Mishkon, and you were looking east, so north would be to your left, and south would be to your right. So the to the left would be Gershon, and to the right would be Kohos. Their task was, they were in charge of all of the Kli HaKodesh, all of the holy objects and vessels that were in the Mishkan, the Oren. The Oren is what we would call the Ark, where the tablets were kept, and the Sefer Torah that Moshe wrote was kept, with the Kruvim, the Cherubs, the Shulchan, the special table where the Lechem Aponim, where the bird was kept, the menorah, the candlesticks, the Mizboches, the altars, all of the Kli, the Pareches. The Pareches was the very special curtain that separated between the Kodesh and the Kodesh HaKadoshim. When we build our shuls today, we follow to a degree the sample, the blueprint of the Mishkan. That's why in the Kodesh HaKadoshim was the Oren HaKodesh, and so we have our Oren at the front of the shul. And the curtain represents the Pareches, which divided the Kodesh from the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And usually there's a menorah, there's a ner tomid, or a light that's always on. And then the bima represents the mizbeach that was more towards the center in the Kodesh. Well, there was a bima, there were two, there was one in the Kodesh and one in the courtyard. This was Kohos. They were in charge of all of this. But what would happen? They weren't allowed to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and they weren't allowed to go everywhere. They were not Kahanim, they were Levim. They had more privileges than Israelim. So the Aaron and his sons would come when it was time to break camp, and there were special covers, and they would pack all of the Kli HaKodesh. They would pack it all up with staves, with bundles. It was all done perfectly. There were special big day sarod, special covers, where they would take the preches itself and cover the altar with it. And only after it was all packed up and it was ready to be moved, then the B'nai Kohos would come in. And they would carry it. But they had no wagons. It says, Bakhesiv Yisol. They had to carry this on their shoulders. They would put staves through the coverings, and they would carry it on their shoulders. And because here the mitzvah was, because we were dealing with the most holy of all of the objects, that the man must carry himself. They actually had the heaviest job. And that's why they had to be very, very strong. And when they would come to the new camp, then they would put it all in place, and then the B'nai Aaron would come again and uncover it and put it in place. The Avoda of Merari, Mishpachas Merari, that was the third son. His family camped Al Yerech HaMishkon Yachanu Tzafona, on the north side. That means that when you were looking at the Mishkon, it would be on your right side. So he was on the north. Cross was on the he was on the right, Cross was on the left, and Gershon was behind. Who was in front? In front was Moshe and Aaron and their families. They camped in front. So the Mishkan was completely surrounded. And then further around were the four camps of Israel. What was the job of the Merari? Their job was the structure of the Mishkan itself was made out of very, very heavy atzei shittim, a certain type of cedar wood. They were large, very large uprights. And then they were covered, overlaid with gold. These were the uprights that formed solid walls around the Mishkan, which was the basic structure, the spine, the structure of the Mishkan. And then they had heavy foundations which were made out of silver. And then they had brichim staves that held it all together. This was the job of the Merorim. They would come and they would take down these kroshim and the brichim and the amudim and the adonav and also everything that was holding up the courtyard. They had wagons though. They would load them onto the wagons. And then they would drive the wagons to the new campsite and then they would assemble the Mishkan again. How did it all work? There was precision. The Gemara tells us, "Kanim zrizimein." They had a very, very intensive education. Every Jew had an intensive education, but their education was far more intensive. And they had to be perfect, perfect. And if they weren't, they got chucked out. There was no margin for error in all of this. You're talking the legion shel amelech, the legion of the king. Even by a melech bosev adom, even by the kings of flesh and blood, there was perfection. Otherwise, you could end up facing a firing squad. But here, you wouldn't end up facing a firing squad. But had to be perfect. And it could. There were even a death penalty from Shemayim. So they had to be very, very careful. And the Gemara says, Kahanim Zrizimein. They were outstanding. So everything worked in precision. It wasn't a balagan. Far from a balagan. Now, so how did it all work? If you look in our Parsha, Balei Shecho, which was in Perek Yud Aleph, Posuk Yud Aleph, there, the Torah gives us an idea of how it's working. I'll read the psukim, but then I'll give you a concise summary of it. And the concise summary, though, Baleischa Yud. Baleischa Yud, Posuk Yud Aleph. The concise summary, though, is not exactly the way that it seems from the psukim. And that is, Vayhi bashona hashenis b'chedish hasheni b'esem b'chodesh. It was the second year now, the second month, that was Iyar, that was last month, the 20th of the month. And there Rashi explains that it's almost a full year since they came to Har Sinai, because they came to Har Sinai in Reish Chedesh Shivan, as it states, B'chedish HaShlishi. And this was 10 days before Reish Chedesh Shivan of the following year. So they were at Har Sinai for a full year, less than 10 days. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, now it's time to move and to go to Eretz Yisrael. Na'le'onan me'al mishkan ha'edus. So the cloud came, lifted from the sanctuary, which meant it was time to move. Vayishu b'nei Yisrael ma'aseyem b'Sinai, vayishkan ha'anon b'mar poron. And b'nei Yisrael started to travel from the desert of Sinai. And they could see, they would follow the cloud, and they could see it was going towards the desert of Paran. And they two traveled first, and this was according to Hashem and Moshe's instruction. The first camp to go was the camp of Yehuda. Yehuda was the melech, he was the king. And he was on the eastern side. The eastern side is the front of the world, because the sun rises from the east. So, and then his Nosi, his king, each one had their own king, their own leader, Nachshon ben Amminadab. Now, every campsite, as we mentioned, had three tribes. The next was Yisachar, and the next was Bulun. All right. Then it states, V'hur ara Mishkan. Then the Mishkan was taken down, the sanctuary. V'nosim v'nei Gershon, u'b'nei Merari, nesi ha-Mishkan. And then traveled Gershon and Merari, who were carrying in the wagons the Mishkan. Then the second campsite moved. Venosa Degel Machne Reuven. The second campsite was the campsite of Reuven. They were on the south side. And together was Shimon, and together was God. Then states Venosu Akohosim. The Kohos, who were Nesi Amigdosh, who were carrying on their shoulders the Kli HaKodesh, the Oren and the Mizbeach and everything else, they moved. Now, why didn't they go in the front with Gershon and Merari? Because there would have been a balagan. Because they would come now with all of the holy objects, and the Mishkan is not assembled yet. And everything had to be perfect. So therefore, they would lag behind in order to give Gershon and Merari the opportunity to get to the new campsite first and assemble the whole Mishkan. So when they would come, it was all assembled and they just had to bring in the Kli HaKodesh. Then after them was Nosal Degel Machne ben Ephraim. The third campsite was Ephraim. These were the sons of Yosef and they were on the western side. And together with them was Menashe and Binyamin. And then the fourth campsite, which was the one on the north side, was Degel Machne Don, Ma'asev L'chol HaMachnes Netzivaysom, and together with him was Osher and Naphtali. This is how they went. But in actuality, it wasn't quite that way. Rashi goes into this, in the Sifsei Chachomim, and the Mizrochi, others go into it at length. And they come to the conclusion, but this has sources in the Chazal, Sifri and others, that, no, this is the way it went. That as soon as the cloud lifted from the Mishkan, which was a sign, it was time to break camp, Yehuda did not move. Yehuda got ready to move. But immediately then, the Bnei Aaron would go into the Mishkan and start to cover all of the holy objects, the Kli HaKodesh. After that was finished, then the Bnei Gershon and Merari would come into the Mishkan and start to disassemble the Mishkan, to take it down, dismantle. And they would take everything that they had dismantled and they would put it on the wagons and they would start driving the wagons to the new campsite before anyone. Before Yehuda. Yehuda was just in position to leave. But they would start. So again, as soon as the cloud would move, so Aaron and his sons would go into the Mishkan and started to cover up all of the holy objects and get that ready to move. And then Gershon and his family, Bnei Gershon and Merari, would come and each one had their job and they would dismantle the whole Mishkan and not the holy objects, though. They would dismantle the whole Mishkan, and they would load it on the wagons, and they would drive the wagons to the new campsite before anyone left the old campsite yet. Only then would Yehud and his camp move, And then after that campsite moved, then Reuven and his campsite would move. After two camps have already left, then the B'nai Kohos would come in. And they would lift up all of the objects, the holy objects, put it on their shoulders, and they would start marching. So they were in the center, two camps in front and two camps behind. And they left a two-camp margin between them and the front in order to give time to the B'nai Merori and the B'nai Gershon to assemble the whole Mishkan before they would come. Then, after them would be the campsite of Ephraim, and then the final camp of Don. And now, by the time the B'nai Kos got to the new campsite, the whole Mishkan was up already, perfect, and they just had to bring in all of the Kli HaMishkan. Now, that's not the simple implication of the Psukim, because in Pasuk Yud Gimel it states, Pasuk Yud Dalet it states, Vayisa Degel Machnev Yehuda B'Rishaynam, that the camp of Yehuda would go first, and only after that does it state V'hurad HaMishkan, that the Mishkan was taken down. So they say what the Pasuk means is that they were ready to go first, or they were the first of all the camps to go. But the fact of the matter is, states that now the first ones would be the B'nai Aaron would come to cover up all the Kli Kodesh, then the B'nai Gershon and B'nai Merari would come in to dismantle the Mishkan, and then they would load it on the wagons and start to move. They would go first, and then after two camps would come B'nai Kosi to lift it all up and carry on their shoulders the Kli Kodesh, then the other two camps, and then by the time the B'nai Kosi got to the new campsite, it was already, the whole Mishkan was set up. This was the Avodah L'shoah. These were their tasks, which we say was only of a temporary nature. It was a long time. It was through the 40 years in the desert. And perhaps when the Mishkan was moved from one place to another in Eretz Yisrael, even though it wasn't moved often, it was also like that. But it was not L'Dedes, it was not forever. What is their Avodah L'Dedes? Once the Beis HaMikdash was built in Yerushalayim, in Har HaBayis, what were the jobs of the Levim? This the Gemara goes into, and the Rambam summarizes. We'll read a few Rambams. The Rambam in Hilchos Kli HaMikdash, Perek Gimel. The Rambam says, Zera Levi Kula, Muvdel Laveiros HaMikdash. The seed of Levi was separated to serve in the Mikdash. As it states, Be'esai Hivdel Hashem Eshevet Levi. At that time Hashem separated the tribe of Levi. U'mitzvus Esei Liyos HaLevim Penuim U'mochonim Laveiros HaMikdash. It's a positive commandment that Levi should be left free in order to have time to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Bein rotzu, bein shalei rotzu. Now this was not voluntary service. This was, compulsory, but what do you call it when this was a conscription. This was not voluntary service. Bein rotzu, bein shalei rotzu. Shneimar v'avad alevi hu es avodas ohel ma'id. This was compulsory on the Levim. Avodah Shelehen, what was their avodah? What was they supposed to do? Here in the Beis HaMikdash. Firstly, Shishemirim Es HaMikdash. They guarded the Beis HaMikdash. Now, when we say they guarded the Beis HaMikdash, what does that mean? Now, we know here in Johannesburg very well what guards mean. But what does it mean there? It's the Rambam in Perichess. From Hilchos Beis HaBechira, another place explains. He says, "Shmiras HaMikdash Mitzvus Ase." It was a positive commandment that the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim should be guarded. Actually, it was a positive commandment and a negative commandment. Afa pishen shom pachen ma'evim b'lei milistim. It's not like our guards that they're there to see that there shouldn't be any vandalism or theft. No. Shein shmirasei ela kovid le. This was known as a shmiras kovid. In a day me paltrin sheyesh alav shemrim, le paltrin sheein alav shemrim. You cannot compare a palace that has guards to a palace that has no guards. In other words, this is what is known as the honor guard. Now, we don't know too much of this today because we don't have royalty. There is a little royalty left, but we don't have royalty, and that's a great shortcoming to the world. The Maral brings all of the time. Royalty is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Gives a new level to the world. We're not talking about a corrupt royalty. We have, instead, we have our royalty is so-called government or democracy or so forth. If you go to England, you'll see an honor guard. Every king, every palace had guards. I'm not talking about the soldiers. I'm talking about guards. It was called an honor guard. Shmira shel kovod. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's palace also was to have honor guards. She'en shmirasei ela kovod lei. In a day, paltrin sheyesh alav shemrim, lepaltrin sheyein alav shemrim. You cannot compare a palace that has guards to a palace that does not have guards. Ushmir zu mitzvosa kol alayla. And this shmir was the whole night. Vashemrim hem kohanim valavim. And the shomrim were both the kohanim and the levim. As it states, vato v'necho itchoch lifnei ohel ha'edus. Many times, as I say, Shomru, Chaynim Keimah. And that's why they camped around the Mishkan. Who camped around the Mishkan? They could have camped anywhere. Why did they have to camp around the Mishkan? They were the honor guards of the Mishkan, of the sanctuary, the Kahanim and the Levim. And if you do not fill the Shmira, then you have transgressed the negative commandment. The Kahanim were Shemrim Bifnim. The Kahanim would guard the Beis HaMikdash from the inside, and the Levim Yibachutz, and the Levim would be outside. And they would divide it up into shifts between all the Levim, because you had to stand outside the whole night to guard the Beis HaMikdash. Alright, so that was one of their tasks. Shomrim, to be Shomrim. What was another of their tasks? Shoarim. Shoarim is that they manned the gates, big gates. They would be the gatesmen. They would open the gates and close the gates. These were the shoarim. Liftoach shari ha-mikdosh alohanif dal seisav. In the morning they would open, and at night they would close. Then there was a third task. Mishayrin. They would sing. So they were the shomrim, and the shoarim, and the mishayrin. When would they sing? Masai emeshira al kol eles hatzibur hacheva v'shalmi atzeres beis nisach hayayin. We've been learning in the yeshiva about the korbanos hatzibur. The korbanos hatzibur were the sacrifices that were obligated to be brought by the entire community, the entire nation. Whenever we daven shachris, that correlates to a Korban Sibur, to a national Korban that was brought. Mushaf correlates to another one. At the time of the Korbanos HaTzibur, and he brings the Shalmi Atzeres, there was an Ola all of the time, but once a year there was a Shlomim that were brought, and that was on Shavuos. So he says, at that time, then they had to sing. Now, the Rambam goes into some details here of what did it mean that they were shayrim, they would sing. Would they sing? Would they play instruments? They sang at the time of the korbanos, at the time that the sacrifices were being brought, when the nisuch hayayin, the wine was being. But what? She says as follows. This is from the Gemara in Masechet Erechin and also Masechet Midas. Ein peischim mishnaim osa levim einim al aduchen. There was a duchen. The duchen was a higher platform. And that's where the levim would go. Now, they're all b'chol yayim le'mashira ala korban. Every day they would sing, because every day there was the Olas Tomid in the morning and the Olas Bein Arbaim in the afternoon. On Shabbos there was the Tomid and the Musaf. So there had to be at least 12 Levim at every time singing. Umosifin adla elam. But you could add as many as you want. You could add 1,000. There was no shir lamala. There was no limit above. The einaimim shira ela bepeh belei keli, and they were obligated to sing with their voices. So he had to be qualified. He had to be someone who could understand music. It was very intricate. He had to be someone who could understand music and who had a good voice, called the Arif. Otherwise he was, otherwise he could guard the Mikdash, but not sing. Without any instruments. Because the main mitzvah of Shira was with the voice. Others would be there, not the Levim, others would be there as a supportive group. They would be there with the instruments. When I said not Levim, that's not 100% correct. Mehen Levim, Mehen Yisraelim. The others could be Levim or Yisraelim, but that was not the mitzvah of Shira. The mitzvah of Shira was with the pair, so you almost had to have at least 12 Levim, or you could add as many as you wanted, that were singing with their voices. The others could either be Levim or Yisraelim. If they were Yisraelim, they had to be what was known as Miuchosim. Miuchosim were those that their family credentials were in perfect order and where they could marry into the kuhuna, because the kuhuna were very strict as to far as who would marry into them. And then the Rambam says the ones with the instruments couldn't be counted in the minimal amount of singers that you had to have at least 12 singers. Then the Rambam writes like this, Bameh hei menagnim. Now, the instruments, what instruments were used in the Beis HaMikdash? He brings from the Gemaras. Nivolim. There was a navel. Now, it's not too clear exactly what these instruments are. You get different explanations. In many translations, it states that the navel, some say it was a harp, another say it was a lyre. Now, I ask again my friend Aaron Ziegler to do a little research into this. So he came up that Rashi and Erechim brings a navel. He says, actually, some say it's both. But Rashi and Erechim says that a navel was actually a hollow leather wind instrument, similar to bellows. Other Maforshim, other commentaries in the Mishnah say it was a stringed instrument with a sound box, like a lyre. At any rate, that was the navel, that was the volume. Then there were the Chalilim. The Chalil, we always translate as some type of flute. Now, the Rambam brings that it was a reed instrument, because he says that the pipe, the tube, should be made from a reed, because that will give off the most beautiful music. Then there was the kinoret, kinor. A kinor, we usually translate as a harp. Some say it's a harp, some say it was a lyre. Others say it was a lute, which is like a guitar. Then there were the chatzetzeres. The chatzetzeres were silver trumpets. And then there was the tzeltzol. The tzeltzol were cymbals. Cymbals were the metal plates that you would bang together. So these were the instruments that were used. Ein peischim mishnei nevelim, Nevolim v'le mesifin al shishu. You have to have at least two of the Nevolim. Whether that was a leather instrument like bellows or was a lyre. And v'le mesifin al shishu. But you couldn't have more than six. When it came to the Chalil, there had to be at least two and not more than 12. When it came to the trumpets, there had to be at least two, but not more than 120. Trumpets were always used for royalty. And placing me Tisha Kinoras, not less than nine of the kinor. The kinor, we said, is like the harp or the lute. But that you could add as many as you wanted. But it's interesting that tzilzol could only be one. Our band should learn from that. That tzilzol could only be one. Baruch Hashem. Then the Rambam writes, "Bimei Amayades Kulam." Ubaroshe Chodoshim Hoyakahanim Tokim Bechatzeitzres Bishasa Korban. On all of the Yamtavim and on Reish Chedesh, the Kahanim, they would blow in the trumpets at the time of the sacrifices. And the Levim would be Aimrim Shir, and the Levim would sing. As it states, Ubiyem Simchaschem Ubamadechem Ubaroshe Chodshechem Uskatim Bechatzeitzres. And the Chatzeitzres were made from silver. Had to be made from silver. And the chalilim, that's the chalil, the pipe had to be from a reed, because then the kele is orev. Then the sound is very beautiful. And there was, the Chazal talk about, they called it mozika. Music evidently is not an English term, because in Hebrew and other words it was called mozika. And they talk about the chochma sa music. And it was enormous chokhmah, enormous wisdom. For example, the Rambam brings here, and the Mefarshim go into, this is from the Gemara and the Mishnah, that when they would end a certain song, or a certain part of a song, and before they would start the other, so only one, the Chalil, the flute, only one flute could play the end, not more than one. Because in that way it would be the most beautiful. Then, incidentally, the Talmidim of the Vilna Gaon write on him that he was a great boki, a great expert in all of the chokhmah sa music, in all of the wisdom of music. Now, b'shneim osir yem b'shona achalil makel lifnei hamizbeach. There's something which I don't quite understand. You see, the chalil we say is the flute, but the Chazal always use the term achalil makel. Chalil makel means that the flute would strike. If it was a wind instrument, a percussion instrument, you strike. But if it's a wind instrument, you're not striking. Achalil makel. Now, Aaron told me that I think he saw this from one of the commentaries in the Mishnah, that it means that they would strike with their fingers over the particular holes which govern the sound that's coming out of the flute. Perhaps, but I don't know, this has always puzzled me. Then the Rambam brings here, there were 12 times a year that the Chalil would be makel ifnei HaMizbeach, before the Mizbeach, by the Shkit of the Pesach Rishon, the Pesach Sheni, Yantif Rishon of Pesach, Atzeres, and so forth and so on. And then he said, the Chalil, this Chalil is Deichas Shabbos, mimnei shush Chalil shel Korban. They were allowed to use this even on Shabbos, because it was for the Korbonis, which those Korbonis took precedence over Shabbos. Now the Rambam brings, in the psukim that we had covered, It states there that you should choose the Levim from 25 years old, and they work till 50. In another place it says you should choose them from 30 years old, and they shall work till 50. Actually, the Chazal say, why 30? Why 30? Why 25? So it says, because in Mishneh Novice learns from there that Ben Shleshim Lekayach, a person is at greatest physical strength at 30 years old. At least that's how it's supposed to be. Greatest physical strength at 30 years old. And the Levim had to be very, very strong because they carried. Well, they weren't carrying small things. So therefore, you only drafted them into the Corps when they were 30. But Zekasha, in our sedrach, is 25. So the Gemara says, and the Rambam brings here, Ein ben Levi nichnas lazor lavadosei ad shilmuduhu chomeshonim tchila. That a Levi, he naturally would go to cheder. Then he would go to Yeshiva Ketana, and then he would go to Yeshiva. Or, if he wasn't good, he'd go to work. States, you know, someone when he was 5 years old started to learn Mikra, but it says 1,000 would learn Mikra and only 100 could graduate to Mishnah. And from 100 that would graduate to Mishnah, only 10 to Talmud. The others would go out to work. So we're talking about a Levi that got through it all. But now when a Levi got to 25 years old, and he was a fine Talmud Chochem, could be a Rav, then he could apply for one of these tasks. And if he was accepted, he was sent to a special yeshiva for the Levim. And this was a 5-year program. So that's why it states that in one place 25 years old and the other 30. At 25, if he qualified, he would be sent to that place to study the Avodas Halevim. And he would both study all the halachos, and the Kahanim would direct him. And it states that he was given 5 years to show that he could do it. If he, after 5 years, was able to do it, then he came into the Beis HaMikdosh. Until then, he wasn't allowed. There was no balagan. Until then, he wasn't allowed. If after 5 years he still did not look promising, then that was it. That was it. He had to look for something else. So that's what the Rambam brings. Ein ben Levi nichmas la'azora la'avedosoi. The Levi could not go to serve in the Beis HaMikdosh, ad shilmadu chomeshonim tchila, until he studied all of these halachas, both studied and trained for 5 years. Shnema zeis asher la'avim, as it states, this is for the Levim, ben chomesh v'esrim shona, at 25 years old. Another place it says 30. Ketzad, he was given 5 years till to train. And if he could made it then, good. If not, not. Now the Rambam says a chidush. It says he worked till 50. And after 50, then they retired him. So the Rambam says that it says that after 50 they retired him. Yoshev mitzvah v'ida. He says that was only during the time when they were in the desert. Because then they had to be very, very strong and they had to carry. But he says that mitzvah was not for the deiris. Was not forever. But the mitzvah that forever, he says a Levi never becomes disqualified because of years. He doesn't become disqualified because of years, and a Levi also doesn't become disqualified because of injury or blemish, like a Kohen would become disqualified because of particular injuries or blemish. So you could have a Levi that was 100 years old. What does he become disqualified though? He says, if he's from the singers, as he gets old and he starts to lose his voice, then he's disqualified. Because his voice has to be perfect. But then he says, even if a Levi is a singer and no longer can he sing, the Rambam holds he can go to the other tasks of the Levim. He can become a guard or he can become a gatesman. All right, those are a few halachos of the tasks of the Levim. There are naturally more, but this is a short summary. Now to conclude, there was no tribe like Levi from all of the tribes of Klal Yisrael. Even though all of the tribes of Israel, everyone was important and everyone had their own special importance. For example, Yehuda, from him came kings. Yosef, Yosef was the Baal Brocha. Yisachar, this was the tribe of Torah. Zvulun, these were the merchants that supported Torah. But still, there was no tribe that could be compared to Shevet Levi. Let's take a look who came from them. The son of Levi was Kohos. The daughter of Levi was Yocheved. Now from Kohos came Amram. And Yocheved married Amram. Yocheved was actually the aunt of Amram, and they married. And from Amram was the god Lador. He was the leader of the generation. Yocheved was from the leaders of the women of the generation. She was from those that saved. She was the head of the midwives. And she rebelled against Pharaoh. From them came Moshe. Their offsprings were Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. From Aaron came Elozar HaKohen. From Elozar came Pinchas HaKohen. Later on down the line from the Levim was Shmuel HaNovi. And who could be compared to Moshe that brought Torah into the world and our greatest prophet? And Aaron and Miriam, that the three of them brought Klal Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. So there was no Shevet that could be compared to Levi. And all of Israel were separated from the rest of the world. They were elevated from the rest of the world. Levi was elevated from Israel. But in Levi themselves was another Havdalah, another elevation. And that's what we mentioned, that was Aaron and his seed. Aaron was separated from the Levim, elevated from the Levim. He was also a Levi. And he was given the crown of Kohuna, the crown of priesthood. So they had two crowns. They had the crown of priesthood and they had the crown of Torah. The Torah tells us in Parshas Va'era, I don't know exactly the reason, but in this is in Va'era Vov, Posuk Tes Zayin, that Levi was Herech Yomov Yesem Yikol B'nei Yaakov. From all of the sons of Yaakov, Levi lived the longest. He was the last of all of the Shvatim to die. He was the third child of Yaakov, as we mentioned. Now the Chazal tell us three is very significant. It states, Yisrael's Tilsoi. Three represents Israel. There's a Gemara in Omar Rebbe Kiva, in Masechet Shabbos, where he says, what's so special about three? So he says, Torah is three. Torah, Nevi'im u'Ksuvim, the Tanakh. We came to Har Sinai by Chedesh HaShlishi, in the third month. Torah was given after a separation of 3 days. We have the three Ovos, Avram, Yitzchok, and Yaakov. We have the three Goalim, Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. We have Kahanim, Levim, Yisraelim. Now, Levi was the third son. What is the explanation why three is so important? The Maral brings because three always represents the perfect mamutsa, the center. It's not extremities are never good, whether to the right or to the left. To be a right winger is no good, and to be a left winger is no good. Torah, which is called Yeshurun, means Yoshur. That's why Yaakov Avinu was Ishtam, means Yoshur. Torah is neither to the right or to the left. It's the harmony, perfection of all. So when you have one, it goes off on one side. When you have a second one, it goes off on a third side. But the third brings it together. Achuta Mishulish Lebim Heira Yinotik. Third binds the two together. And this was the greatness of Klal Yisrael. Yisrael's own name is from Sar and from Yoshor, that they were able to be Mekabel the Torah. The Umas nations of the world were not, because they were not center. Esav came and said, well, what does it say in the Torah? You shouldn't kill. He says, what's wrong with killing? He was a great right winger. And Ishmael came and says, well, you shouldn't steal. You can't make peace with the Torah like that. Klal Yisrael immediately said, Nase v'nishma, no problem. Because they were Yoshua. And this was Yaakov Avinu. And this was Levi. In Vayetze, Chof Tes, Pasuk Lamed Daled. The reason for all of this is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is neither a right winger or a left winger. He's the perfection of the world. Chof Tes Lamed Daled, it states, Vatar od, this is embracious. Vatar od vatelet bein. Leah conceived again and she gave birth to a son, Vatomer Ato, and she says, now. Why now? So Rashi explains, because they knew that Yaakov Avinu was to have 12 sons. They knew he was to have 4 wives. She says, now I've taken, nobody can have any complaints against me. I've taken my full portion. This is my 3rd son. Ato hapam, yilavi ishi elai, and now my husband will always love me because I have given him my full portion of sons. So it was Levi, ki yiladit lishlishavonim. I gave him 3 sons. Alkein korosh my Levi, and therefore the name was called Levi. Levi is from the word levaya, malava. She said, now my husband, levaya means to come together. You escort someone. She says, now my husband will always escort me, will always be with me because what I have given him. So it was Levi that brought Yaakov to Leah. And this was the power. Yaakov represented the Shekhinah. This was the power of Shekhinah. There was Levi that would bring Shekhinah to Klal Yisrael. Now, in Rashi says, he says what we said here, that this is the 3rd. And then he said, it doesn't say, on the other sons it says that she called them. The mothers gave the names. Here it just says he was called. So Rashi says, Bekulim Shiva Tikra Vzeksi Vekoro. Yesh Medrash Agoda. Shesholach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Gabriel. When Levi was born, Hashem sent Gabriel, the angel, Ve'avilafonav, to bring him to him. And Hashem gave him the name, Vekoro Leishem Zeh. He gave Levi his name. Ve'nosan Lechov Dalet Maton Matnes Kuhuna. And he gave him the 24 gifts of Kuhuna, because the Kahanim would come from Levi. Ve'ashem Shelavoh B'matonus Koro Levi. And also another reason, because he escorted him with so many gifts. And then, finally, the Rambam tells us that when we started to talk about Levi's Chuyas, we started with the golden calf. We said that at the time of the golden calf, Moshe came and said, Mi l'Hashem Eloi, whoever's for Hashem, let him come to me. Vayosfu elov kol shevet Levi, the whole shevet Levi came to him because they didn't serve the golden calf. The Rambam says, no, it didn't start there. It started way before with Levi. The Rambam in the beginning of Hilchos Aveda Zorah says, it says that Abraham taught Torah to thousands of people. He taught them the mitzvahs that they had to know, thousands and tens of thousands. And then he instructed his son Yitzchak. Yitzchak went and he taught Torah to Yaakov. Yaakov went and he taught Torah to his sons. And then he says at the end of Perek Aleph, V'Yitzchok hodia le'Yakov. Yitzchok instructed Yaakov. U'minhu l'lamed v'yosha u'minhu l'lamed v'yosha malamed u'machshikol ha'nilvim elof. Yitzchok carried on with Avram did. V'Yakov avinu limad bonov kulam. Yaakov taught all of his sons v'hivdil, and he separated Levi. Already Yaakov Avinu, long before the golden calf, separated Levi, because he saw the potential in Levi. Umina Rosh, he made him a Rosh Yeshiva. V'yeshiva b'yeshiva. He told Levi, and he told all the brothers, Levi, his job is to be a Rosh Yeshiva. He's to make a yeshiva, l'lamei derech Hashem v'lishma mitzvahs Avraham, to teach the way of Hashem and to guard the mitzvahs of Avraham. V'tziva esbonav shalayi yafsiku v'mnei Levi mamuna acha mamuna. And he commanded the other brothers that they should see that he is supported in order that he can carry on the yeshiva generation after generation. K'dei shalei tishkach halimud, lest Torah will be forgotten. And this is what carried on with Yaakov and his family until there came a nation that knew Hashem. Until they went down to Egypt. And they were there for a long time, and they started to learn the ways of the Egyptians, and they started to worship like the Egyptians, the stars and so forth. Chutz mishevet Levi, with the exception of the tribe of Levi. She'omad b'mitzvahs omris. Levi, the entire tribe, held to the mitzvahs of the fathers. U'me'olam le'ovat shevet Levi avodas kechovim. And the tribe of Levi never served idolatry. So this is where Yocheved came from, and this is where Kohos came from, and this is where Amram came from, and Moshe, and Aaron, and Miriam. But Levi already was separated from the early days, from the first generation, by Yaakov. And Yaakov saw his potential. He says, your job is to teach Torah. And me'olam, and they never served Avodah Zarah. That's why when it came to the Egel Azov, the golden calf, everybody went and served. Not everybody, but from each tribe there was some that went. But Mikan, Shekol HaShevet, the entire tribe didn't serve Avodah Zarah. This gives us a good grounding into the Shevet Levi, the mitzvahs of the Levim, and a little of the Kahanim. Thank you.
The Yeshiva Gedola hopes that you have learned much from the presentation. For further information, or to order additional shiurim, please contact the Yeshiva Gedola of Johannesburg. Visit us on the web at www.ygj.co.za or contact us via email at audio@ygj.co.za, via phone at 011-648-7906, via fax at 011-648-0085, and via post at P.O. Box 66226 Broadway 2020, Johannesburg, South Africa.